certain of his practical sides of his life yesterday. But Imam Hussein alayhi salam, since birth and since his childhood, was a person of great piety, and this is well established even in Sunnah it works. I had hoped we would discuss piety yesterday, but we were not able to do so. And hence, I hope there will be another occasion later in our sittings to discuss that subject. But it is well established that he was not only a man of great piety since childhood, and even in his early youthhood to all along. There is a lot of space inside if you want to come in, please. And not only piety in the sense as we understand it, but a child of great wisdom. And one found that a number of sayings developed from him since childhood. These sayings were really lessons taught in the course of life by him to a number of people, particularly his followers. These lessons remain of importance till today because they contain not only deep philosophies, but they contain advice on matters of wisdom apart from religion, but of course religious wisdom, such wisdom that can change the very course of life of a human being entirely from the wrong path onto the right path, or from a weird path onto a straight path. And I find, as I studied them, and I hope you will find likewise, that those words uttered centuries ago are so true to life today, and are so true, and perhaps one sometimes feels more true to our present life, as it was when he uttered those words in the circumstances in which he uttered them. It appears that they were couched in a manner that would have eternal applicability. The first of these that I wish to discuss with you are his words that he uttered to Muawiyah. Muawiyah was sitting in a discussion, and one of those rare moments in Makkah when Imam Hussein alayhi salam was also there. And discussion arose on what is the right way for a person to behave in given circumstances. We know Muawiyah's attitude, and we know his viewpoint. His viewpoint always was that the exigencies of the circumstances prevailed. There was no right or wrong. Whatever was expedient was to be done. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's golden words were, "One who seeks the pleasure of Allah at the expense of the wrath and displeasure of other people will be protected by Allah, and for him Allah will be sufficient. But he who incurs the displeasure, the wrath and displeasure of Allah for the pleasure of men will find that Allah abandons him, forsakes him, and he is then left to the mercy of his people." And how true are those words? How true are those words? And let us take his own example. And I'm sure he meant to say a good lot of words there to Muawiyah himself, and to teach Muawiyah how to behave. Those words, taken in the context of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, as I hope we will see in his more intimate words at the end of this session, taken in the context of his own life, he abandoned everything for the pleasure of Allah. And even when he was advised, as we shall see, that he should not take certain steps, for example by Muhammad ibn Hanafiya, his brother, he still took those steps because they were in the pleasure of Allah. To do that which is right, to do that which Allah commanded, and to refuse to do that which only would be done for the pleasure of people, to make people happy, to earn, let us say, a position in life, to earn some money which will last only for a few days. If only for those purposes one takes steps contrary to what Allah has prescribed, what Allah has commanded, the result will be that Allah will leave him to the mercy of the people. With Imam Hussein alayhi salam, one sees that the ultimate result was that not only was Islam saved, but even from his personal angle, Allah promoted him to a very high status. Tomorrow night, inshallah, I hope to commence a discussion on the predictions about the martyrdom by the Holy Prophet and what the Holy Prophet himself said would be the results to Imam Hussain alayhi salam personally as a result of this martyrdom which he was undertaking. And yet, when Muawiyah is left to his people, how did he die? And what happened to his kingdom? In 1,000 months, the Umayyad kingdom was totally disrupted. He was left to the mercy of the people, and his own people disrupted the Umayyad regime. It was lost in no time. I wish to say no more on that tonight, to save time for other matters, because this is a subject for which I have been given 5 nights, although at the moment I have serious thoughts as to whether we will be able to complete the subject in 5 nights, but that's a matter on which I will keep you posted in due course. But we had 5 nights to discuss what happened to each one of those killers of Imam Hussain alayhi salam, starting from Umar ibn Sa'd and indeed ending with Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad himself. Yazid, of course, had died quite some time ago and died, I like to use the word perished, in circumstances unknown. And today when you go to Damascus and ask the guide where is the grave of Yazid, he will hesitate to tell you where the grave of Yazid is. Nay, if you ask him where is the grave of Muawiyah, because he certainly is considered as an eminent emperor who ruled over Damascus, if you ask him the grave of Muawiyah, he will give you a vague answer that it is behind the mosque. You will hardly be able to be sure that that is the proper place where Muawiyah's grave is. The words of the Imam alayhi salam, that if you act for the pleasure of Allah to the displeasure of man, Allah is sufficient for you and he will see you fulfilled. But if you work entirely for the pleasure of men, at the expense of the displeasure of Allah, he leaves you at their mercy. And what can man do to you other than exploit you for his selfish motives and then desert you? And that has been the fate of a number of dictators, including the dictators that we know ruled the world in this particular century. Sufficient number of them to your knowledge for me to take your time this evening. This is how it went. And that is why Imam Rabah salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi has taught us a beautiful dua to be recited after morning prayers, after Fajr prayers. And he says immediately after prayers, supplicate to Allah in these words, Bismillah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, وَأُفَوِّذُ أَمْرِي إِلَى اللَّهِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ بَصِيرٌ بِالْعِبَادِ, that I start in the name of Allah, and may his blessings be on the Holy Prophet and his progeny, and I leave, وَأُفَوِّذُ أَمْرِي إِلَى اللَّهِ, I leave all my affairs to Allah, إِنَّ اللَّهَ بَصِيرٌ بِالْعِبَادِ, he is a person who sees my circumstances, he sees the circumstances of his servants, he knows what the needs are and how they should be fulfilled. I leave my affairs to Allah. What can that man need more if he has left his affairs to Allah? He's leaving his affairs to him who is omnipotent, who can solve all our problems. Now you can see the beauty of that dua, to start the day with those words, saying to Allah, I leave my affairs of the whole day to you, and you will sort things out for me to what is in my betterment. That is the first teaching that I wanted to draw your attention to, that he has taught us that in all circumstances we must act for the pleasure of Allah, even if it means displeasure of man, even if it means we do not get the number of votes we need, because people will not be happy with what we are saying. Well, the second one I wish to bring to your notice is, I do this selectively for a special purpose to which I shall allude once I have set out his words. A Shia approaches Imam Hussain alayhi salam and says, I am very conscious of certain sins I commit, I want to refrain myself from those sins, but I am not able to do so. Every time I try, I do not succeed. Teach me, give me a medicine, teach me a lesson whereby I can have the courage, I can have the determination to refrain myself from those things. And Imam Hussain alayhi salam instantly says, and you have heard this so many times, yet it is a saying worth repeating even on a daily basis. He says to this person, he says, well, remember five things, and if you do remember those five things, you will keep away from the sins. And he says, what are they, Yabna Rasulillah? And he says, one, do not eat of the sustenance of Allah, and then you can commit your sins. Because how can you commit sins of He who gives you sustenance? You eat the food He gives you, and then you speak evil of Him. You eat of Him and abuse Him and disobey Him and flout His laws. That is not possible. So, do not eat of His sustenance. But is it possible to live without eating of His sustenance? Because He is the only person who provides food. And if every time we sin, we were to think of that, that is a deterrent which the Imam says will become an effective deterrent. Secondly, he says, if you want to sin, get out of His kingdom. Because how can you live in His kingdom and commit sins when He is the Lord? And what better and quicker way of dealing with this proposition except to repeat the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Du'a-i Kumail, words that are on your lips, when he says, وَلَا يُمْكِنُ الْفِرَارُ مِنْ حُكُومَتِكَ. It is not possible to run away, O Allah, from your kingdom. Your kingdom is universal. You are omnipresent. There are no demarcations. One does not need extradition laws, for example, to take Pinochet from England to Spain. Not required at all. I will not name those who are required in India from England at this special moment because it may be sensitive. Well, those extradition boundaries do not exist with Allah. Imam Ali alayhi salam puts it so aptly, وَلَا يُمْكِنُ الْفِرَارُ مِنْ حُكُومَتِهِ. Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, be conscious of that you are in His kingdom and are yaksin. The third thing that he says to this particular person is that when you have to sin and you have that urge, try and say that you must commit sin in a place where He will not see you. But He sees you wherever you are. He is omnipresent and He is an omniscient. So how will you commit that sin in a place where He is not there? And fourthly, he says, ask yourself whether when the angel of death will come to take your soul away, you will be able to tell him, stop, don't take my soul away, it's my soul, leave it with me, leave it where it is. And Surah Waqia, فَلَوْلَا إِن كُنْتُمْ غَيْرَ مَدِينِينَ تَرْجِعُونَهَا إِن كُنْتُمْ صَادِقِينَ. Allah says, when your فَلَوْلَا إِن كُنْتُمْ غَيْرَ مَدِينِينَ, when your soul is removed, if you really are a person who is not helpless, if you are a person who can do anything about it, well, then make sure that soul which the angel of death has already taken from you, you can take from him and tarjuna and restore it into the body. If you can give yourself life again by returning that soul, well, in kuntum swadiqin, if you are truly truthful. Those are words uttered in challenge to the atheists who are saying that there is no God. There is no God. Powerful words used by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Surah Waqia, saying, well, the fact that the angel of death will come and remove your soul and you will be helpless at the time is in itself proof that there is a God, and He is the one who controls how long you live and how long you don't. Imam Hussain alayhi salam uses that concept and teaches this person to say, look, if you then will not be able to have your soul stopped from taken away, being taken away to the next world, then you can sin. But the moment at that time of reflection you decide you can't do this, then you would not be able to sin. And ask yourself that if as a result of your sins on the day of judgment you are being taken now to be flung into hell, will you be able to stop that angel from throwing you into hell and say, no, I will not be thrown into hell, I will go to heaven? If that power is not in your hands, then you cannot sin. A beautiful scenario which, if kept in view constantly, can well today save us from those sins. Now that is a saying which I'm sure you've heard again and again. And you've heard it said that these are the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam. You may have heard it being said that these are the words of Imam Hassan alayhi salam. You may even have heard it said that these are the words of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam. Yesterday, a friend asked me after I was sitting that hadith of Asam that you said, isn't that a hadith with regard to Imam Hassan alayhi salam? And you said it with regard to Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And I said, exactly so. That identical incident occurred with Imam Hassan alayhi salam. The point I seek to prove is that this pious, pure family is so righteous that one finds that a righteous answer given by one will be the righteous, that very righteous answer given by the other when asked the identical question in identical circumstances. It is this constancy, it is this consistency in their conduct and in their behavior that proves their righteousness and proves not only the level and standard of their knowledge, but proves the authenticity of their claim to imamah. And this is why the Holy Prophet, when he mentioned of the 12 successors, and we've already discussed this in the very first sitting on Sunday night, when he mentioned of the 12 successors and he was asked about them, that how will they behave with regard to each other, his answer was, أولنا محمد أوسطنا محمد آخرنا محمد كلنا محمد. He said, he said, you will see no change between them. That those words uttered by one will be the words that will be uttered in identical circumstances by the other. And the words uttered by one in different circumstances will not be uttered by another in yet more different circumstances. But the differences will be shown. Not only that, their conduct will be identical. And this is why we say, I was at pains last year, if you remember, to say that it is wrong to say that Imam Hussein alayhi salam went out on jihad and Imam Hassan alayhi salam went out to make silah. I was saying the exact opposite, that it was Imam Hassan alayhi salam who went out to fight Muawiyah and Imam Hussein alayhi salam went out to make peace. And I hope we shall discuss this in a couple of nights to come, that he never went out to fight for a kingdom. The way he went out proved that he went out entirely for the cause of Islam. But we always say that if Imam Hussein alayhi salam had been placed in circumstances in which Imam Hassan alayhi salam was, he would have behaved exactly the way Imam Hassan alayhi salam did behave. And if Imam Hassan alayhi salam had to go to Karbala, he would have behaved exactly the way Imam Hussein alayhi salam behaved. Because this is a family of righteousness, and given the circumstances, they will behave in a way that is righteous. And that is why you find these close similarities. Indeed, when one studies the behavior and conduct of Imam Hassan alayhi salam, one finds so many of those exact incidents reported in the life of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. But this was his teaching in respect of this matter, even if identical to the teachings of his brother, his father, and his son. I used the word Shia. I said a Shia approached him. And on other occasion, another Shia approached him and said, Yabna Rasulillah, I am your Shia. And then went on to say what he wanted. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam immediately stopped him. There is a lesson for us in the teaching of Imam Hussain alayhi salam, in that particular incident, he stopped him and said, do not make a claim in respect of which Allah may question you on the day of judgment. And when he questions you, he might find you have lied. You better say that you are amongst our friends. Qul ana min mawalikum wa muhibbikum. I'm amongst your friends and amongst those who love you. You are then on better ground than to say that you are a Shia. Because to be our Shia, you have to be a person with a clean soul, with a clean heart. Short of that cleanliness, you cannot be a Shia. Of course, one cannot be a Shia if one does not say one's prayer, because you are not a Muslim then. Salah is an obligation on all Muslims. Saum, to keep fast, is an obligation on all Muslims. To go to Hajj is an obligation on all Muslims. Those are not matters we consider in this aspect at all. Those are to be taken for granted. It is the behavior in excess, in addition to these fulfillments, that makes one a Shia. The step further, that one follows the right successes to the Holy Prophet. And that righteousness that is achieved as a result. And when this person asks Imam Hussain alayhi salam, what is it in particular? What is it in particular that is required of the cleansing of the heart? And Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, it must be a heart pure of any malice to anybody and pure of any fraud to anybody. So those are the matters that we have to purify ourselves of, having hearts with no malice to any individual and hearts with no thought of fraud to any person whatsoever. Well, that is the standard he laid. When we come to discuss Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam, inshallah, we shall see how he defines the word Shia and says, be our adornment. Don't be a set of people to disgrace us. And we shall look into that when the time comes. Well, this is how he taught us to be Shias, that merely fulfillment of salah and sawm will not be enough. It is our conduct. Indeed, I would use a more general word and say it is our character that makes us Shias. And this is how he behaves. From day after tomorrow, inshallah, we shall see how his character is depicted and portrayed in every step that he took from Medina right on to Karbala. And indeed, we have already discussed, I shall only remind you of the steps he took between Karbala and Damascus. Well, even in ibadat, one finds that he has been at pains to say what form our worship should take. Because the whole essence of the life of Imam Hussain alayhi salam was to uplift our level of life. That man is not making progress unless he develops himself. And development is not only in respect of getting a better job or earning more money. The real development is the inner development. Because it is when one is at peace with oneself that true happiness is achieved in life. Not only that, but one is able to uplift oneself spiritually to reach a level at which one is then in union with divinity. And I'm not talking as a Sufi. I'm talking in terms of practical realities of Islam, because that constitutes true spiritualism. And it is that nexus of spiritualism in our daily lives that makes us separate from non-Muslims or from atheists. It is that nexus with Allah in all our actions. And hence I started with those words, acting for the pleasure of Allah. Asked about salah, about ibadah, Imam Hussain alayhi salam, and you may remember the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam as I speak the words of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, there are three types of people who say their prayers. There is that one who says his prayers to have his wishes fulfilled. These are days when exams are taking place in Mumbai, I am told. So, I am sure there are those, and I'm not discouraging this, those who will say their prayers, so that they can then pray to Allah that they pass their exams. I congratulate them for doing so. Even for doing so, I congratulate them, because at least they are conscious of the fact that it is Allah who will help them to pass exams. And Allah is the only person to whom, from whom you seek help. As I said, وَوْفَبِذُ أَمْرِ إِلَى اللَّهِ is the teaching of the 8th Imam to us. But Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, yes, whilst that form of worship is also a worship, and there may also be sawab for that salah, and we do not derogate it, but it is the worship of a businessman. You sell goods to get money. You make ibadah so that Allah fulfills your wishes, whatever those wishes are, whether to be a millionaire or to get good health or to pass exam or whatever they are. But he says that relationship is the relationship that is created by a businessman, not a worshipper, not a man of piety. He says the second one is one in which people say their prayers because they are scared of Allah. They are fearful of hell, that if I will not say my prayers, I might be thrown into hell. Yes, that fear also is a laudable fear, because he will be a stupid person, as we shall soon discuss. He will be a stupid person who does not think of his hereafter. People die every day. Indeed, it is said that a person dies every second. As I speak, so many mu'mineen are dying in the world, whether in one part of the world or the other. And this is a reality. We all know that we will all die. And we all know that we have to prepare ourselves for the life hereafter. And the first question is on salah. We know all that the first question will be on salah. Undoubtedly, the Holy Prophet said that. Well, in that case then, we want to say our prayers. And even if we say our prayers for the fear of Allah, that He does not throw us into hell, at least we might save ourselves from hell. So, I am not derogating that prayer at all, nor did Imam Hussain alayhi salam. But he says that is a prayer of a slave who behaves as his master tells him, because otherwise he might be punished. That is the prayer of a slave. But that prayer is a prayer of a Shia Muslim who prays to Allah for as a thanksgiving, thanking Him for all that Allah has provided, seeing Him worthy of a person to be worshipped and worthy of being thanked for all His favors to men. And for how many favors can we thank Allah that emanate on us at every minute, every second of our life? The best course then is to worship Him the way that He wants us to be worshipped. وَلِذِكْرُ اللَّهِ أَكْبَرُ. And the highest form of worship is the remembrance of Allah. And what to say of that remembrance which He has prescribed. So He teaches us that we stand to worship Allah in thanksgiving to Him, in recognizing that He is worthy of that worship. Such are the words that Imam Ali alayhi salam, for example, he says, La a'buduka raja'an fi jannatik aw makhafatan fi narik, walakin abadtuka in wajadtuka ahlan li ibadatik. I have not worshipped you, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, out of craving for your heaven. It is not because I want to go to heaven that I worship you, nor do I worship you because I fear your hell. But I have worshipped you because I have looked around, and having examined everything, I have found that you are the entity worthy of being worshipped, worthy of my worship. Ahlan li'ibadati, you are the one to whom my worship is due. You are entitled to that worship. You can see that is the level to which to raise us to a level at which that communication with Allah is a pure communication. That relationship is a sincere relationship. And indeed one finds that the people he selected, just in case we do not have the time to discuss this day after tomorrow, that the people he selected were people who were at a level that their relationship with Allah was of that nature, fighting for the sake of Allah, wishing to get reward from Allah, because Allah is worthy of that particular prayer from him. And this is what Sunnite writers say about the piety of not only Imam Hussain alayhi salam, but even the companions who were with him. They say that Imam Hussain alayhi salam, when told on the 9th of Muharram in the afternoon that Umar ibn Sa'd la'anatullah alayhi has decided that battle should start that afternoon, Imam Hussain alayhi salam sends Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam to ask for a respite of one night. And he says clearly that I want one night so that I do two things, that I worship in salah, I worship Allah in salah, and I supplicate to him. And that is all he wanted to do in this world. It may be useful that we sometimes pause for a few minutes of our lives and think that if we are told that tomorrow is the last day of your life, what would we do? How many things would we be busy with? Maybe I would want to clear up some of the cases, pass them over to another lawyer, maybe complete the income tax return. So how many things would I be thinking of? To Imam Hussain alayhi salam, given that one night, the only thing of importance was lisalli rabbi, so that I say my prayers to my sustainer and I supplicate to him. But that by now may be easy for us to understand, because for the three nights we are discussing the excellence of this personality. But it is said, not only does Sayyid ibn Tawus say that in his work on Ashura, but all the Sunnite writers, and not to mention to you Kharzami who says that, and Ibn Asakir who says that, but Tabari says this, and Tabari is translated into English, and in that English translation he says that on that night of the eve of Ashura, one finds every single companion of Imam Hussain alayhi salam, either he is in ruku, or he is in, three things are mentioned, either he is in ruku, or he is in sijda, or he is in qunut, or he is reciting Quran. That is the level of the people he chose, and those are the people with whom he went. Why is it important for us to discuss that tonight? It is important because a time will come. We have discussed it in 1996. Maybe we will have occasion to discuss this again in future if Allah so wills. But a time will come when, after the reappearance of the 12th Imam, Ajjalallahu Farajahu, after his reappearance, this battle is going to be refought at the time of Raj'ah. And at that time, those who have lived their lives as true Shias, and particularly those who have been righteous on the whole and have been true Azadars, have really sincerely mourned Imam Hussain alayhi salam and lived according to the teachings of Imam Hussain alayhi salam, they also will be brought back to life and they will join the 12th Imam in that battle. Now if we want to be in that battle, and if we want to be the companions of the 12th Imam alayhi salam, then that is a level we have to attain. And hence, as I said yesterday, I would be the first to admit that it's a difficult level to attain. But we have got to talk about it. Because when we talk about it, we become conscious of it. And that consciousness will, inshallah, lead us to that achievement of that level. So that we too partake with the 12th Imam alayhi salam. Indeed, one hadith says that no one will be a companion of the 12th Imam alayhi salam if he does not wake up for tahajjud every night. Now that is the level, waking up for the Mazhab, not only reciting regular prayers, that is the level at which Imam Hussain alayhi salam wanted to uplift us. But in day-to-day matters, can I quickly say two things that Imam Hussain alayhi salam taught? Somebody approaches him and starts talking to him and he says, no, don't talk, salam first. He says, salam must come first, assalamu alayk, and the answer, wa alayk assalam, are absolute necessities before you start conversation. And what beautiful social teaching that is. Because assalamu alaik means there is peace to you from me. And the answer, wa alaik assalam, there is peace to you from me as well. That communication of peace between mankind is what Imam Hussein alayhi salam, like his grandfather, wished to achieve in this world. And that brotherhood between Muslims is best achieved with that insignia of peace. I say that, even if I devote no more than 2 minutes to remind you of that, because today times are changing, and we forget to say assalamu alaikum. Some of us deliberately do not say it. In parts of Western countries, it is, in England it used to be hello, but now the Americans have taught us hi. So when we meet each other, it is just hi. Totally an Islamic method of life. Imam Hussein alayhi salam says that hi will only take you low. It will not reach you anywhere. If you wish to create a social atmosphere of brotherliness in the community, that salam is very important. And another thing that he says, and I wish to put that very quickly too, is do not behave in a way in which you have to apologize. I say this because it's become so common that you do wrong things, and when you do wrong things you say, I am sorry. And that, as it were, saying I am sorry acquits you of all the wrong you did, because it does not. It does not complete the matter. It only, perhaps at the most, shows where guilt lies. But in today's culture, saying I am sorry is enough. Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, behave in a way in which you do not have to apologize at all, because you are not sure whether your apology will be accepted or not. And if your apology is not accepted, you remain answerable to Allah. And because you do not want these small acts to accumulate against you on the day of judgment and make a huge debit balance against you, the answer is not to behave in a way in which you can be subjected into a situation of having to apologize to Allah. Another occasion on which Imam Hussein alayhi salam meets Muawiyah again in Makkah. Muawiyah has a discussion on intellect. He was very fond of talking about these sophisticated subjects, only to show himself competent of their discussions. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam happened to pass, and one of the companions of Muawiyah, and this is the tragedy of Muslims of the time, they appreciated who Imam Hussein alayhi salam was, and yet fought against him entirely for the greed of the world. And this is what we in today's life have to be careful about, because we can so easily fall prey to that, and inshallah we shall discuss 3 nights later. However, he stops Imam Hussein alayhi salam and says, Ibna Rasulullah, what do you say about intelligence? And Imam Hussein alayhi salam uttered memorable words which today are enshrined in Arabic literature, whether by Muslims or non-Muslims, Christian Arabs, Jewish Arabs, they all will utter this saying. The words of the Imam alayhi salam says, لا يكمل الأقل إلا بإتباع الحق. لا يكمل الأقل. Intelligence is not perfected. And this is so important today. He says intelligence is not perfected إلا بإتباع الحق, except by following what is right and doing what is righteous. That is what he says is the perfection of intelligence, philosophy in its deepest roots, but with practical value, not philosophy to keep flying in the air, but with deepest value on earth. For this reason, that today we see people who we regard as intelligent, our professors in universities, for example. You find them people of great intelligence. I have gone through this in my life, and I'm sure my younger brothers in universities go through this as well. Eminent personalities, authorities on their subjects. And you find they are atheists. They don't even believe in God. And they are very proud to say that. Say, well, I'm not an atheist, I'm an agnostic. They've coined this new term. To me, the two are synonymous. What is the point in saying you are an agnostic? In other words, you are not sure that there is Allah. There is not, in your opinion, there is not enough proof that there is Allah. And what is the difference between saying that and saying there is no Allah? It's half-fitting with no consequence at all. You end up in not believing Allah. The weighty words are those of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Dua-i Sabah. In Dua-i Sabah, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, Ya man dalla bi zatihi ala zatih. O one, the proof of his existence lies in his very existence. I do not have to prove that this younger brother of mine is here, because he is here. Imam Ali alayhi salam says that is precisely the state of Allah. He is there, and that is proof that he is there. But these eminent people are not even prepared to accept that there is Allah. The youth asks that question. How is it that these people don't believe? And the answer to that is, they have not perfected their intelligence. Their intelligence has only been to the extent that they have become excellent computer scientists, or excellent cardiologists, or excellent engineers. But in the scope of life as a whole, they have not perceived life. Yasin has a number of answers to that particular question. They have not perceived life as it in fact is. And I do not wish to make this a dry discussion. I will pull on and pull out of this in a matter of minutes. And hence have not been able to comprehend. And they have not been able to comprehend because they have not seen life in its full circle. They have thought of life as ending with death, and not life that proceeds after death, despite the fact that they know that death occurs every time. What Imam Hussain alayhi salam had in mind, of course, was beyond that. They were all Muslims there. He did not, and this is the kind of problem I am talking about, which is applicable in our social and cultural problems of today, when we find these situations arising. But righteousness arises out of the fact that you are in Ghadir. You hear the Holy Prophet saying, Man kuntu mawlahu fahada aliyun mawlah. And yet you go and say Bakhin, Bakhin, and yet you go in Saqifa and appoint someone else as a successor to the Holy Prophet. Is that intelligence? Imam Hussain says, La yukammilu al-aql illa bi-ittiba'i al-haq. And hence, when you enter the Zari of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Najaf today, even today, and these words have been retained even today, as you enter the first set of huge words you see is Al-Haqq ma'al Ali wal-Ali ma'al Haqq. That is where Haqq lies. The first meaning of Haqq, of course, is Allah. But there we are. That is where Haqq lies, being able to follow righteousness and to be able to follow what is right. But taken further, and I know I'm proceeding at a speed, because I'd wish to cover more than I have been able to cover, but I'm sure you are with me when I take you on a long leap and say that even when we come further down to normalities of life, there is the right course and the wrong course. Aql will always guide you to the right course. And if you take the wrong course, if there is a way of making money rightfully, and there is a way of making money wrongfully, if you do it rightfully, you have acted with aql. Even if making money is quicker and more beneficial going the wrongful way, when you take the wrongful way, it is not by keeping aql. You might be trapped, you might get into serious consequences to follow. People with brains have been found to be misusing their brains. For example, Umar ibn Sa'd. I take an easy example, because we are discussing that particular subject. Imam Hussain alayhi salam says to him, Oh Umar ibn Sa'd, you know, because your father told you. If somebody else had told you, you might believe it or not believe it. You know that the Prophet said, I am the leader of the youths of heaven. And Umar ibn Sa'd, in his private discussion, When Imam Hussain said this to him in open on the day of Ashura, he did not reply. But in his private discussion on the 7th of Muharram, he said, yes, I know that too well. And And my father has told me that the Holy Prophet has said so. So Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, look, if I am the leader of the youths of heaven, and if the license to take people to heaven will be given to me by Allah on the day of judgment, then if you reach peace and settlement with me today, I can assure you, I can guarantee to you that I will take you to heaven. Now, Aql demanded that Umar ibn Sa'ad should have followed that. And yet he manipulates and says, yes, but Yazid has offered me the governorship of Rai, the governorship of Tehran. He has said that if I have your head chopped off and send your head to him, he will give me three things. He will make me the governor of Rai, he will give me 1,000,000 dinars, and 1,000,000 gold coins are a lot of money, and he will give me the hand of his daughter in marriage. What else could Umar ibn Sa'ad in the world want? But you can see those manipulations were so transient. Imam Hussain alayhi salam immediately turns around and says, oh Umar ibn Sa'ad, let me tell you now, and I shall come back to this in a couple of nights in another context without repeating this particular incident. He says, oh Umar ibn Sa'ad, let me tell you now, you will not get even one of those three. Yazid will not give you the governorship of Rai, nor will he have the authority to do so. You will not get any money from him, and he will not give you his daughter in marriage. On the contrary, you know from the Holy Prophet that I will keep my word. Yazid will not keep his word. And yet he says, a bird in hand is worth two in the bush. I will go for the bird in hand. And then manipulations take place. And from day after tomorrow night, we will see how matters are maneuvered. And that maneuvering takes place even today. Alas, alas, may God forbid. But those maneuverings take place in our communities as well. Shias maneuvering against each other. And it happens even today. One wonders whether that is true aql, or whether that use of intelligence, indeed, that abuse of intelligence to achieve that which is wrong is called aql, then Amr ibn As, la'anatullah alayh, would be perhaps the most intelligent of people who ever lived. And hence, Imam Hussain alayhi salam emphasizes to us that the way to behave in this world is to make sure where is righteousness. As we said yesterday, when Aslam asked him, who do I accept? What I see of you and your personality, your gentleness, your high character, or do I follow what I've always been told about Ahlul Bayt? And Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, decide and judge according to the measure of your intelligence. Judge righteousness and act righteously. That, he says, is intelligence. One of his predecessors said, Ra'asul Hikmah, Makhafat Allah, that the head of wisdom, wisdom is in the head. And you can imagine this, the words are that the head of wisdom lies in the fear of Allah. And Imam Hussain alayhi salam always lived himself. These were not words, as I said, uttered in vacuum. His entire life was spent in the fulfillment of these words and in living entirely for the sake of Allah and entirely for Allah. I will miss out an important point on freedom of thought that Imam Hussain alayhi salam talked about, because the clock at the moment does not permit us, but I shall make sure that inshallah we come back to this perhaps when we will be discussing Kufa in about 3 nights from tonight. Because it is an excellent teaching on political thought by Imam Hussain alayhi salam. Political thought, which will make you consider the political thoughts of today and whether democracy achieves it, whether socialism achieves that political thought. Imam Hussain alayhi salam's practical thought has always been that you act so that Allah is pleased with you when you go back to him. And on the night of Ashura, he tells his companions, you are passing through a bridge. Oh, and he calls them, oh sons of the nobility, because those are the people he picked. And we shall consider, inshallah, given the opportunity this year, in what he had to say about his companions. He says, O sons of nobility, you are facing death tomorrow, but you are really passing over a bridge. Death is no more than a bridge. A bridge that takes you from distress and afflictions of this world into a heaven of vastness and bliss. And who does not wish to leave a prison of afflictions and enter a palace of a space and peace and tranquility? This is how he saw death, that bridge that you cross over. And hence, he was able in his lifetime to live a life in which he abandoned everything. He abdicated everything for the sake of Allah. If Islam was to be saved by his death, that is what he preferred. That is what he preferred. He said in one of his sayings, he says that if wealth is the important thing in life, how much more pleasurable is the pleasure of Allah? How much more permanent is the pleasure of Allah than that wealth? And if man, the body of man is created so that that body dies, and this is the reality, each body, each human body dies. Imam Hussain alayhi salam says that if that body has been created, and let us look at the end, he says, when you look at the beginning, if it's been created so that it dies, then what better death can there be than dying by a sword in the cause of Allah? Because then you die a martyr and you go to heaven straight away. And he says that if rizq is ordained by Allah, how much we earn and what sustenance is we get is ordained by Allah, then why does man cling to wealth? What we discussed yesterday. Why does he cling to wealth? And his treasure, he says, is something to be left behind. And you go empty-handed to your grave. Imam Hussain says, where is the intelligence in grasping to that which you are going to abandon? What is the intelligence in grasping that which you are going to abandon? He himself lived in that spirit, a spirit in which he left everything of the world, in order to attain the pleasure of Allah. And I shall prove that as I seek to conclude this sitting tonight by his own words on the day of Ashura. I want to do this because these words are usually uttered on the day of Ashura in the context of Masaib. We hear them, we weep over these words, we do not have the time to reflect on them. Let us reflect on these words tonight. And if by emotion we slip away, we will slip away into Masaib anyway. The words he utters, and we get this from the enemies. We get this from Umar ibn Sa'd, and we get this from Shimr, la'anatullahi alayhima. When he descends from his horse, and he falls on the ground, authorities are unanimous, saying that because of his condition, he fell in a way in which his forehead touched the ground first, because there were so many arrows on his body, so many arrows, that he could not have come down, he could not have disembarked from the horse in the normal way. He fell from this horse and his forehead came first on the ground. And the words he uttered as he came on the ground were, تَرَفْتُ الْخَلْقُ تُرًّا فِي هَوَاتٍ. He says, I have given up everything. Turra, I have given up everything in this world for love of you, fi hawa. وَأَيْتَمْتُ الْأَيَالِ لِكَيْ أَرَاكَ. And I have even accepted the orphanage of my beloved children so that I meet you. What a level! What Sufi does not prostrate and bow to Hussain alayhi salam over these words? These are the words by which he ends his life, saying, تَرَكْتُ الْخَلْقَ تُرَّ فِي هَوَاكَ. And وَأَيْتَمْتُ الْأَيَالِ لِكَيْ أَرَاكَ. And I have accepted the orphanage that my children should be orphans so that I meet you. فَقَدْ قَطَعْتَنِي فِي حُبِّهِ إِرْبَى. And if they, out of my love for you, for the sake of my love for you, they were to cut me into pieces, even then I will not bow illa siwak, except to you. I will only bow to you. These are the words by which he leaves this world. That is not the time you exaggerate your life. And that is the time he sums up his life in those lofty words, memorable and historical as they have been left to become today, that a person lives in such a way that his love for Allah and his living for the pleasure of Allah is at a level at which nothing then matters. Everything is given up. And when he ultimately reaches the ground and his death is now imminent, Shimr it is, La'anatullah alayhi, says, I put my ears to listen to what he says, and he says words you all have on your lips. He says, Rizan biqadaik, I am pleased with your destiny. That is true submission of a human being to Allah. That even at that level, when he is about to be assassinated now, the teaching is that we live only for the pleasure of Allah. He says, Rizan biqadaik, maybe they will murder me in the next step, but if it is in your cause, I am pleased with this. Wa tasliman li amrik, and I submit to your will. Wa sabiran li balaik, and I am patient in these trials that you put forward towards me, in these trials that I am now going through. La ma'bud illa siwak, there is no God of me, there is no person I worship except you, ya sariqh al-mustafriqin, O one who helps those who seek your help. And after those illustrious words that Shimr gives us, Shimr says, I went on now to assassinate Imam Hussain alayhi salam. I wish to raise only one matter with you this evening in questioning the action of Shimr, because Shimr la'anatullah alayhi says that at that time Imam Hussain alayhi salam turns to me and says, Ya Shimr, I am thirsty, my neck is so dry. Just give me some water before you assassinate me. Shimr did not give any water to Imam Hussain alayhi salam and assassinated him in that condition. This is why we hear that when the fourth Imam alayhi salam would pass by the shop of a butcher in Medina, he would stop and cry. Then the butcher goes out and says, Ya Rasulullah, why are you crying at my shop? He turns round to the butcher and says, Oh butcher, did you give water to that sheep or goat? Did you give him water before you assassinated him? Because in Karbala, they killed my father without giving any water to him. The question we ask Shimr tonight is this, Oh Shimr, why didn't you give him water? You would have killed him anyway. Why didn't you give him water? But Oh Shimr, what did you think? If you had given Hussain water, would Hussain even have drunk that water? A few hours back, Akbar had come to him and said, Father, I want some water. Give me a drop of water and I'll go back to fight. Hussain says, Oh my beloved son, after that gigantic battle you fought, you come and ask just for water and your father does not even have a drop of water to give you. Qasim came back from the battle and says, Oh uncle, give me a little water. And here was that father who a few minutes back held his 6 months child in his hand, all he wanted for his child was some water. He laid the child on the ground saying, give him water if you think I will drink it. Water was not given to Allah. He was darted thirsty. Would that Hussain who had missed all his beloved children without water, would he have drunk water at that time? ألا لعنة الله على القوم الظالمين وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون إنا لله وإنا إليه راجعون رحم الله من يقرأ الفاتحة